Members, 1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the meeting of the Taxes Committee for February 9th, 2022 to order under Rules 10.01, which allows for remote. Those who are watching, audience from outside, the members and so forth, if you want to receive the materials, go to the website, Minnesota Legislature. Go to the Minnesota House of Representatives, go to committees and divisions, and then to the Taxes Committee. And in the lower right, you have all of the materials and the agenda and all the bills for this meeting. So at that, Ms. Griska, please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Representative Carlson is present. Representative Detmer. Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Herr present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas up and taking nourishment.
Representative Hertas present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Mortensen present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Schultz present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson. Representative Swazinski.
Stevenson present.
Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim is present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. Members, we have three sets of minutes. We'll take each of them separate to approve. Representative Lislegard, you move the May 5th, 2021 minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion to approve the May 5th, 2021 minutes. Any discussion? Questions? If not, I am going to call for the vote. If you would temporarily unmute yourselves, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The May 5th, 2021 minutes are approved. Representative McDonald, I remember last year you felt left out of these proceedings for approving the minutes. Would you care to move the June 18th, 2021 minutes?
I did feel left out, but now I'm left in. So, yes, I approve the minutes as amended.
All right. Any questions of the June 18th, 2021 minutes? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor of these minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The June 18th, 2021 minutes are approved. And Representative McDonald, if you do the honors for February 2nd, 2022.
Yes, I make a motion to approve the minutes for February 2nd, 2022.
All right, very good. Representative Garofalo, did you have a question? Or did you have a question on the February 2nd, 2022 minutes? I will announce your attendance in just a second.
No, Mr. Chairman, I was just making sure to check in for attendance. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any other comments on February 2nd minutes? Donna, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. February 2nd, 2022 minutes are approved. And also to note that Representative Garofalo and Representative Detmer are present. Members, we have three bills on the agenda for today. And the first bill is House File 3104. Representative Les Legarde, would you care to move your bill? And it is being referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Division.
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Lescar moves to refer House File 3104 to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Lescar, please explain your bill.
Okay, it's pretty simple. There's going to be two changes. The County Ag Society sales tax exemption expanded to include sales prior to county fairs. And then secondly, the County Ag Society tax savings transferred to the fairground owner will be removed. And with me, I have AJ from the Minnesota Association of County Fairs to testify and speak more in detail.
Okay, I think we'll take the testifier and then folks have questions. So Mr. Dewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Dewart. I'm here representing the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. And I also want to thank Representative Lislegarde for bringing this bill forward today. And very briefly, before I get to the bill, I want to also thank you, Mr. Chair, for including the underlying sales tax exemption in your 2019 tax bill, and also to Representative McDonald for authoring that bill back in 2019. Talking to the county fairs, since it's been into effect, to each county ag society, I can report back that it has had a significant positive impact on every county ag society across the state. And what this bill does is it makes it a little bit more efficient. What I think also represents what, in my opinion, was the legislative intent back in 2019. Moving on to the bill, as Representative Lislegarde said, section one of the bill simply makes the, we think just makes the sales tax exemption flow more efficiently. Roughly half of the ag societies in the state own their own fairgrounds, so this section really wouldn't have any effect on them. And the other half are mostly owned by counties. And really, almost all county ag societies have a great relationship with their counties or their municipalities where their fairgrounds are located. So the feedback I get is this isn't really fixing a problem. It's more of an efficiency. There's some confusion, like, do we just send it to them so they send it back to us, or how does that work? Because it's really the county ag society that carries out the maintenance and improvements of the fairgrounds. And then section two of the bill, I'll say fixes maybe an oversight on my part when we passed the bill in 2019, because what the legislature was intending was to make a sales tax exemption for the purposes of holding the fair. So what the statute currently says is sales made on the days of the county fair. But what I overlooked at the time was that a lot of county ag societies will make sales prior to the days of the fair for events that take place during the fair, typically grandstand events, although some will even make pre-sales for attendance to get into the fair. I believe the legislature did want to exclude sales made outside of the days of the fair, because there are ag societies will make some sales, typically rent for events that happen on the fairgrounds or sometimes storage. And under this bill, those sales would still be subject to the sales tax. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony and happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Dewar from members? Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dewar, maybe you mentioned it in your testimony, if I may not have heard it, but in regards to pre-ticket sales for events during a county fair that are online, would they be included as a sales tax exemption? I know that we didn't get that done the last time with the online sales, the pre-ticket sales for a combine crash derby at the at the event. So would this be included in that?
Mr. Dewar?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative McDonald. I believe so. Maybe not Parsons, Devin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this language will include those sales as a sales tax exemption as long as the event has taken place during the days of the county fair and on the county fairgrounds.
Representative McDonald.
Great, good, because I had heard from our Wright County Fair that they're very appreciative of what we did last 2019, but this was an item that they were wanting to have done this year. So thank you, Mr. Dewar and Mr. Chairman.
So, Representative McDonald, did you a combine demolition derby? You're not. That's pretty expensive. What are you? Or did I get that wrong?
No, you got that right. We've had combine demolition derby here in Wright County, and I think it's going to be August this year. I'll keep you posted. And it is a lot of fun. So yes, you heard me right. And it is expensive.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, can you just explain for me and for us why this tax exemption is important for the counties?
So, Representative Mr. Dewar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moran. Yeah, absolutely. The sales tax exemption came forward 3 years ago. And in fact, we had proposed it even a couple of years prior to that. To help reinvest money back into some of the fairgrounds around the state. We have a wide variety of county fairs. Some of them are doing very well with a lot of investments from their counties, and some are not doing so well and really improving the facilities around the county fair, because the County Ag Society, as charged in statute in Chapter 38, is charged by the state to hold and they carry out a county fair to the benefit of the public and to the community. So what the sales tax exemption did was, you know, further allowed the state to allow county egg societies to carry out that charge of holding the county fair.
We also have Tiffany Gustin, who is from the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, Ms. Gustin.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt, members of the committee. I just am basically...
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Tiffany Gustin. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs. And I guess I will just add one thing to Mr. Dewar's response to Representative Moran. And that's that, and I think that Mr. Dewar said it very well, and that in a lot of cases, there are fairs that are doing very well. Others are a labor of love for their fair board members. And these dollars, the tax exemption allows the... would allow the Ag Society to keep those funds and then really to reinvest them into repairs and maintenance on the ground. That could be, it could be exterior envelope issues such as roofing or siding on buildings to support the fair, but it is also interior, for example, electrical improvements and those types of things that allow the fair to run. But really some of the fairs are really desperately in need of safety and accessibility projects, and these funds help to assist with those projects as well.
Representative Moran.
Oh, thank you. That's good information. Thank you.
Very good. Would anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 3104? See none. Any members' questions or comments? Further questions or comments? If not, Representative Leslegard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The county fairs mean so much to so many different people for different reasons. Growing up, I was in 4-H, and it was always the highlight of the year to be able to bring our animals and showcase them and participate. So I showcased my cows and I rode my horses. So it was a big deal, and I know it means so much to different parts of the state. And so I just thank you for your support. And as you can see, I'm wearing United States colors. We won today. We beat Russia 6-5 in curling. So go USA.
That is good news. Thank you, Representative Leslegard. So Representative Leslegard renews his motion to refer House File 3104 to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. We need to vote on this. So members, I'd have you unmute if you would. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. So thank you, Representative Lessigard. Also, Representative Swazinski is in attendance. We'll get that noted.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Very good. Next bill up is House File 2756. Would someone care to move House File 2756? Representative Lessigard moves House Representative Lessigard moves House File 2756. Representative Truskowski, welcome back to your former committee. Great to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you, members. House File 2756 is simply a two-year extension on a sales tax exemption for construction materials and restaurant equipment for a building and an adjoining building that formed out a really important part of Mazeppa's downtown. This was passed originally in 2018. It lasted 2 years. This bill attempts to simply extend it for an additional 2 years. It would expire at the very last minute of 2023. With us, Mr. Chair, we've got at least two testifiers. I know we have Mr. Hagfors, who is the mayor of Mazeppa, and Mr. Betcher, who is the former mayor of Mazeppa, with us as well.
Very good. So who would like to go first? And if you would just identify yourself.
This is Chris Hagfors from Mazeppa.
Very good. Nick, are you the mayor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mayor. Go ahead.
We would really like to see this extension happen. It's when the former building burnt down, there was motivation to rebuild on our main street, and then that didn't happen. Now, from what I understand, we have a motivated buyer on that property that wants to build another establishment on there. So it would be great if we could have this extended and make this happen and help revive Mazeppa a little bit. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else care to testify? Very good. Please identify yourself, please.
I'm John Betcher. I'm the former mayor, and I'm on the Economic Development Authority, and they give me the hope that I could bring some commercial business back into Mazeppa. As you know, this bill was passed, and there was a sales tax exemption, and due to the pandemic, all the plans on building there got put aside for the last 2 years, but now seeing that it's hopefully coming to an end, if you do have a family or of sorts that would like or looking at putting facilities on that vacant area left from the fire, and I know the sales tax exemption expired on December 31st of 2021. So we're asking for a two-year extension on that in the hopes that we really can get some fresh business into a small town in Minnesota. One of the lowest net revenue counties in the state is Wabasha County, which we're located in. And at the time when that other bill was passed, there was an abatement paid to Wabasha County and an abatement paid to the city of Mazeppa. So that's been done. All we're asking for is that extension on the sales tax for facilities to be put up there. Thank you.
Very good. And I know once a mayor, always a mayor. So Mayor, what's the population? Of Mazeppa.
We're just in the neighborhood of close to 900 people, 850 okay. to 900. Haven't seen the last statistics as far as the count of people in Mazeppa. We're growing. We have, in the last few years, we've grown 3 to 4 houses a year, which helps us, but we need to get some supporting business to support this community.
Very good. So, well, thank you. So, members, this is something we did approve a few years ago, and as the testifiers said, with COVID and everything else, basically it's not a new ask, it's just the extension to be able to hopefully get some development and make that work. So I see some hands raised. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Jaskowski, for bringing this forward. I will be supporting this today. You know, when communities around our state face unprecedented and unexpected, you know, damage and suffering, then we show up for each other, whether that's, you know, in Representative Marquardt's district in the Red River Valley, or it's the fire in Mazeppa. You know, the neighborhood where I live, the post office that's a block and a half away from me is still in rubble. There are many empty places in my district where there were buildings. And so I guess, you know, I just want to say that whether it's an unexpected downtown fire in a community of 900, or it's the result of, you know, a response to a police killing in a city of 400,000, wherever it is across our state, you know, where our cities and our communities are facing destruction that they need help to fix, then we're going to be there for each other. And so I'm going to, you know, cast this vote happily for Mazeppa. And I would hope that, you know, my colleagues would have the same compassion for people on Lake Street and for Minneapolis and for St. Paul, where we're still trying to recover almost 2 years later. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also wanted to speak in support of this. I've been through the thriving metropolis of Mazeppa on several occasions. For any of you who haven't taken a drive through that driftless area of southeastern Minnesota, I'd encourage you to do so. You can take a shortcut off of 52 straight over to Wabashaw. And it's a beautiful drive over in that area. So all I wanted to say, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just also just want to speak in favor of this bill. You know, we've got some opportunity here. I know there are other bills out there that will be a hair bit broader than this that will give relief across the state. Whether you're building a road project, sewer project, any type of project across the state, even the state of Minnesota pays sales taxes on the materials they use oftentimes in lump sum contracts for road projects. So it'll hold, you know, the Highway Trust Fund. It's a bill that I think you're going to be hearing up shortly in conjunction with the League of Minnesota Cities. You know, I think we've got some great work we can do this year to give some real relief, not only to the city of Mazeppa, but across the state.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Jaskowski for bringing forward something important for his district. With all the things going on in St. Paul, to really pay attention to the local communities is really what we're here about, and the responsiveness of this issue, even though it was a few years ago. I just want to thank him for his leadership in his community on that.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience or out there that would like to testify on House File 2756? Go ahead, sir.
Yes. I'm Carol Marion. I'm the city administrator here in the city of Mazeppa. This bill, I mean, it's not overall on the taxes of the whole state. It's a very small portion. But for us here, if we could get a viable business back onto that vacant lot, it would not only would it, you know, aid in the community of you know, increasing our business, increasing our tax base in the future, but it would also kind of help to erase the pain and the the misery of losing that historical building that was there. And I think that everyone, in down to every last person in the community, would really appreciate being able to see that and have it be a healing factor from something that, you know, really damaged the history of the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Seeing none, any further members' thoughts or questions? If not, Representative Druskowski, thanks for bringing this forward, and best wishes to the community to get this, to get a development in, because I know what it would mean to a small community to get, you know, to replace that building, get something thriving there and so forth. So Representative Druskowski, thanks for bringing this forward. Any further comments, Representative Druskowski?
You guys have a busy agenda ahead. I just want to thank you again so much, Mr. Chair and members, and good luck on the rest of your meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Leslegard renews his motion to lay over House File 2756 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Representative Druskowski. Members, we have one more bill left, and it is House File 3083, which I will move at this time for possible to lay over for possible consideration into the House omnibus tax bill. This is the exciting, the adventurous, the always usually highly non-controversial Department of Revenue technical and policy bill. And as we have done in the past, members, as I have the department go over the bill, is that if there is, and this tradition goes back to Chair Davids, Chair Lucheski, Chair Krinke, Chair probably Abrams, is that if there is anything that members flag or see that might be controversial, or we get testimony where it might be controversial, we typically will lay that aside, and unless that gets resolved, that would not be included into the House omnibus tax bill. So with that, we have Joanna Bears from the Department of Revenue. I think you're going to start things off, and then I think there's four sections. I think what we'll do is take each section at a time, and then members, if you have any questions on that, after each section, feel free to ask any questions. And then I think besides the Department of Revenue, I think we have maybe one or maybe two other testifiers. And you do have a letter of support if you went through your materials from several different groups that you might want to take a look at that, dealing with the tobacco taxes, and here a letter of support for this bill. So with that, Ms. Bears, welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears, and I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We want to start first by saying thank you, Mr. Chair, for authoring this bill. And we want to thank you and the committee for hearing House File 3083. We appreciate the opportunity to present on it today. As many of you know, our mission at the department is working together to fund the future for all Minnesota. Together is the most important word in our mission, because we cannot do our work without you or your staff. So thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a great team. We appreciate their expertise, and we value our working relationship that we have with them. One of our key strategies to achieve our mission is to provide superior service by engaging in meaningful interaction with our customers. And during those interactions, we hear or notice items in the tax code that are clarified, updated, or corrected. Some of these items may seem relatively minor, but they're important to ensure we are providing customers with the information, education, and services they need to efficiently navigate Minnesota's tax opportunities and obligations. At the department, the engagement and interaction does not end there. Prior to the bill being introduced, we share and ask for feedback on these proposals with stakeholders and others. We also make a commitment to continue working with stakeholders and others on these proposals throughout session. Mr. Chair and members, that commitment also extends to you. If there are questions or issues that arise, we would appreciate the opportunity to work with you to find solutions or answers to any questions you may have. Please feel free to reach out to me at any time. Again, thank you for this opportunity to present and discuss this bill. And at this time, I will turn it over to my colleague, Margaret Reisdorf, who will walk you through Article 1. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Reisdorf, and we'll take questions after each article.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize, my camera is not working. So if it's all right with the committee, I'm just going to leave it off, if that's all right. So I'm going to start Article 1. Article 1, well, first of all, my name is Margaret Reisdorf, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I work primarily in the area of individual income taxation. I'm going to be presenting Article 1. Article 1 has two sections that make technical clarifying amendments to Minnesota statutes. The first change is found on lines 2.1 and 2.2, and it amends the pass-through entity tax that was enacted last session to make clear that the law permits limited liability companies taxed as partnerships or S corporations that are so that they're included in the definition of a qualifying entity. This technical change is effective retroactively for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2020, so that it is retroactive to the enactment of the pass-through entity tax. The second change is found on lines 4.23 and 4.26. This change amends the partnership audit regime statutes that were also enacted last session that conform our state law to the federal partnership audit regime enacted back in 2015. This change makes it clear that if a federal partnership, if a partnership is federally audited and in a reviewed year that partnership had elected to file and pay the pass-through entity tax, that the partnership is required to amend their pass-through entity tax report to update for that federal adjustment. This section two is effective retroactively to when we enacted the partnership audit regime. This concludes Article One, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on Article One? Members, I made a mistake earlier on House File 3104. We took a vote on it, but we actually have to do a roll call vote. So when we're completed with this bill, we're going to go back and take a roll call vote on 3104. So just so you know, that's what we're going to do. We can't just take a voice vote, I guess, with the, it sounds like, to be safe. So Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I believe the chairs never really make a mistake. They're just adjusting the plan as they go along.
Representative Swazinski, isn't that what I said, is that we're adjusting things as we go along here right now? Yes, yes. Thank you very much for that clarification. All right, so we're going to complete this bill, and then we'll come back to that. Article number two, then. I see we've got some new folks. Mr. Jordan, I see, if you'd introduce yourself and go with that.
Okay, great. Thanks, Chair Marquardt, and good afternoon to the committee. My name is Jim Jordan. I'm also an attorney at the Department of Revenue. And I'll be walking you through the special tax provisions in the policy and technical bill. I'll address most of Article 2 and two special tax related provisions in Article 3, which concern police and fire state aid. And after I'm finished, I'll hand it over to my colleague after taking questions, Dexter Wilson, who will summarize the one sales tax provision in Article 2. So let's start with Section 1 of Article 2, found at line 5.7. This provision realigns deadlines related to the department's job of annually establishing the debt service surcharge rate imposed on gasoline and related fuels. First, a little history. In 2008, the state issued bonds to investors to pay for improvements to interstates and highways. The state must pay off the debt on those bonds, obviously, and the state chose to fund those bondholder payments by imposing a surcharge that is added to the gasoline tax that we all pay at the pump. So for example, the current total per gallon tax rate for regular gasoline is 25 cents. When you add the current debt service surcharge rate of 3.5 cents per gallon to the underlying 25 cent rate, you get the total tax at the pump for regular gasoline, which is 28.5 cents per gallon. Now to why we're proposing this amendment. The department annually sets the surcharge rate based on MMB's annual petroleum debt service surcharge forecast, which forecasts how much the state owes bondholders. Prior to the 2021 session, MMB had to publish the debt forecast by March 1st, and then the department had 1 month until April 1st to use the MMB forecast to determine and publish the surcharge rate. In 2021, the legislature moved the annual deadline for the MMB's publication of the forecast back 1 month from March 1st to April 1st, but did not make the corresponding change to the department's deadline for publishing the surcharge rate. So this amendment realigns the annual deadlines by also pushing back the department's debt service surcharge publication date by 1 month. And you'll see that the amendment obviously also removes some outdated language from the subdivision. We'll now move to, we're going to actually skip section two. That'll be addressed, sales tax related. That'll be addressed by my colleague Dexter Wilson after me. So we'll go to sections three and four of Article 2 at lines 6.1 and 6.12 respectively. Now these provisions clarify how to calculate the taxable amount for tobacco use tax. Current law states that the amount subject to tobacco use tax is the, quote, cost to the consumer, end of quote. This proposal will help those who owe tobacco use tax by clarifying two things. First, consistent with a similar definition in tobacco tax law and consistent with sales tax law, it clarifies that the taxable cost to consumer includes delivery charges and packaging costs. Second, consistent with sales tax law and liquor gross receipts tax, it clarifies that the taxable cost to consumer for tobacco use tax does not include taxes imposed directly on the consumer that are separately stated on the invoice given to the consumer. In other words, it clarifies that you don't pay tobacco use tax on other directly imposed taxes like sales tax, so long as those taxes are separately stated on the receipt. Now I'm gonna jump now to Article 3 only because there's two special tax related provisions in Article 3. All of this article addresses police aid and fire state aid. And specifically, I will be addressing two very similar provisions in this Article 3. The first, which addresses fire state aid, is section 13 of Article 3 and is found at line 12.3. The second, which is a similar provision that addresses police state aid, is section 20 of Article 3 and is found at line 17.1. This technical clarification is actually thanks to legislative staff, more specifically Senate staff, two insurance premium tax credits, the film production credit and Minnesota housing tax credit, were added during the 2021 session. Senate staff recommended the change I'm about to discuss during the 2021 session, but the legislative calendar just got too busy to get this done last year. So now to the proposed change. The premium tax chapter gives insurance companies three opportunities to take credits against premium tax that insurers would otherwise owe the state. First opportunity is the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit, which became effective in 2010. Second opportunity is the Film Production Credit, which was enacted in 2021. And the third is the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit, which was also enacted in 2021. All three of these premium tax credits have language in the insurance premium tax chapter that clarifies that even though insurers receive credits against the premium tax, the credit, quote, does not affect the calculation of fire state aid under section 477B and police state aid under 477C03. In other words, current insurance premium tax language makes clear that when DOR, the department, calculates the total amount of police and fire aid available to be apportioned to municipalities based on reported premium taxes paid by insurers, it should be based on premium taxes reported by the insurers prior to the insurers taking any of the premium tax credits. The problem we're addressing is that there's no parallel clarifying language in the two sections that actually instruct the department on how to calculate the fire and police state aid available for apportionment. The proposed amendment would simply add the similar clarifying language to those two sections. And with that, my part of the Article 2 and Article 3 summary is complete, and Dexter Wilson now will complete Article 2. He's from the sales tax division.
Mr. Wilson.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dexter Wilson. As Jim said, I'm an attorney at the Department of Revenue supporting the sales tax division. I'll be going over the one sales tax proposal in Article 2. This is Section 2, beginning on page 5, line 27. This is a simple change. Minnesota is a member of Streamlined Sales Tax. This proposal amends the definition of state for sales tax purposes to conform with the recently amended Streamlined Sales Tax definition to include any territory of the United States. This concludes Article 2. Now stand for questions prior to handing the bill over to Margaret to discuss Article 3.
Thank you very much. Chair David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Jordan or Mr. Wilson, it looks to me in Article 2, Section 3, Subdivision 4, there is a 95% tax on shipping and packaging of certain tobacco products. Now, that's not current law, and it looks to me like, Mr. Chairman, they're sneaking one in us, on us in here. It's not current law from what I understand. It's on shipped product, and they want to tax 95%. Now, I think that does not belong in the policy technical bill.
What, Chair Davids, what number, where is that at in the bill so I can
Article 2, Section 3, Subdivision 4.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so Mr. Jordan or Mr. Wilson, and so that's line 6.6 to line 6.10, I think.
And Mr. Chair, too, before the answer, I mean, who pays 95% tax on shipping? I guess that question, Mr. Chairman, is for one of the testifiers.
Yeah, Mr. Jordan, or? Mr. Jordan, you're muted.
Okay, can people hear me now?
We can.
Great. Well, thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Chairman Marquardt. With respect to your first comment, Representative Davids, I think you had referenced that we may have added a 95% tax. So I'm just trying to understand, there's been no change to the tax rate in the provision.
Well, it looks to me, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jordan, looks to me like now you're going to charge that 95% tax on shipping and packaging also. And that'd be quite an expansion.
Okay.
Okay, and that's on line 6.7 and 6.8 then.
I now have a better understanding of kind of where you're going, Representative David. So I guess what I'd say to that is the rate is obviously consistent, and the rate has always been applied to the cost to the consumer. And so what we're trying to accomplish through this, you know, policy technical change is just to put in statute what has always been the working definition of how to calculate the cost to the consumer. And so, and again, these definitions are very consistent with sales tax and other excise taxes. So we did our best to, you know, be more clear about what, how to calculate the tax for, you know, everyday consumers. And we are making clear too, through this change, that the definition that we're adding to statute, which has always been the working definition, is definitely consistent with similar taxes. So whether or not, I mean, I guess I would just leave it at that. I don't know if Joanna has anything to add or.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest we pull that out, because what's happening here, that's supposed to be for like e-cigarettes, I think, not for packaging and shipping of all tobacco. Am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Jordan?
Representative Davids, Chair Marquardt. This is only applicable in a use tax context. So this is only relevant if use tax is owed. And again, the 95% has been consistent for many, many years. So this is just our attempt to provide a definition of how to calculate that. And again, it's consistent with the definition as it's been applied by the department. And it's also consistent with other similar taxes like sales tax and other excise taxes.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jordan, but it looks to me like we're adding a 95% tax to shipping and packaging that we don't currently have. Am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Jordan.
Representative Davids, I mean, you could, I guess you're characterizing it as adding a tax. I think of it more in my role as providing a clarifying definition. And, you know, we think that's helpful for the average person. So I don't consider it adding, but you know, I consider it a clarification of the definition.
So,
but Chair Mr. Chairman, it does.
Yeah, let's
add.
Do this, if I might suggest. So, right now I have made note of this part here. I think we do need absolute clarification of what is the actual impact. I mean, will this actually add a tax that someone is not? I mean, it's the practical aspect of who's paying whatever, and if there's going to be an increase. So I have flagged this part right here. So
okay, that's Mr. Chairman. That's great for me. Just want to bring it to your attention.
Yeah, we need more clarification. This has been flagged at this point. Yes,
Representative Marquardt, maybe I could hand it off to Joanna Bayers to also address this issue.
Okay, very good, Ms. Bayers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids,
That's actually current law for our use tax. We're just defining it in the statute. But it is current law. That's why there is no cost.
Okay. Well, we might have to gather around and talk about this a little bit.
And thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yep. You bet. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question to just a comment that was made by Mr. Jordan. During his statement, just in that last bit of questioning, he talked about the taxes that are being levied at this level are meant to be paid by the consumer. Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Jordan.
Can people hear me? I'm just trying to keep track of my mute button. Thank you, Representative. The consumer, the use tax is owed by whoever owes it under state law. So typically that is consumers. Since about 2005, Minnesota has had a law that requires certain retailers to collect and remit use tax. And in 2021, the legislature clarified that, an obligation on certain retailers to collect and remit use tax, and apply that obligation to all tobacco products taxed under Chapter 297F, which is our tobacco tax chapter.
So it's understandable that tax will get passed. So thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's just understanding that any taxes levied at this level will get passed on, again, you know, with the tax incident studies, no matter what tax it is, whether it's about tobacco, whether it's alcohol, whether it's gas, whether it's corporate or business tax, you know, all these taxes get passed on to the consumer. I think that's just kind of the point we're trying to get at there. So,
very good. Any other questions? Representative Lessegaard, I know you had your hand up for a while.
I did, Mr. Chair, but I just thank you for your approach to flag this and talk about it. It may be a technical change, but I'm not comfortable raising any taxes with a $7.7 billion surplus. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. This has been flagged, this area. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Anything else on Article 2? All right. We'll move to Article 3 in the bill. Fire and police state aids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Margaret Reisdorf, again, with the Department of Revenue. And again, I apologize for my camera or lack thereof.
Please proceed.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Margaret Reisdorf, and I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I'm focusing primarily on individual income tax. However, I'm going to provide an overview for Article 3, proposed amendments to the fire state aid and police state aid programs that are contained therein. Just to start out, so we remember we're in phase two of these changes. These changes were developed with the help of the state auditor, the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association, the members of the Minnesota Police Chiefs Association, the Department of Public Safety, as well as the subject matter from the city of Moundsview. So by way of background, in 2019, the legislature passed phase one of the department's proposed two-phase recodification of fire state aid and police state aid statutes. Chapter 69 of the Minnesota statutes had previously housed both the fire and police state aid provisions, plus a confusing mixture of insurance and pension law. So in phase one, back in 2019, the Chapter 69 was repealed and recodified into two chapters, 477B, which contains fire state aid, and 477C, which now contains police state aid. In 2020, phase two of the recodification was introduced as part of the department's policy and technical bill and was considered at the House Property Tax Committee. A tax bill did not pass that year, and the proposals were not reintroduced with the department's bill in 2021. This current proposal is very similar to the 2020 version and would streamline the requirements for aid within both chapters 477B and 477C. Broadly, the proposal updates the filing requirements to include information the department needs to quickly determine eligibility and to calculate and distribute aid, while minimizing its current need to engage in frequent one-on-one communications with municipal administrators hunting down necessary information. With these amendments, municipal administrators will know exactly what information is required, when it is required, and the consequences that come from noncompliance. We're hoping that clarity will make these programs more efficient and allow the distribution of aid to all participating municipalities happen quickly and accurately, allowing municipalities to focus on providing safety for their communities. On a more detailed level, sections 1, 17, 18, 19, 21, and 22 provide deadlines and procedures where statute is currently silent. The language provides dates for the state auditor to file financial compliance reports with the department and appeal deadlines for municipalities to contest their apportionment of fire state aid or police state aid. The language also addresses how to correct clerical errors when apportioning aid and how special taxing districts and joint powers entities are to be paid. Sections 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 amend or add definitions to the fire state aid chapter 477B. For example, section 2 adds a definition of apportionment agreement, which is a form used by the department when multiple fire departments provide fire protection to the same municipality. Sections 3 through 6 update and create definitions regarding joint powers entities and fire protection special taxing districts, neither of which existed back when the fire state aid statutes were last updated in the 1960s. Section 14 updates the population and estimated market value definitions to reflect the most up-to-date and accurate information available. Sections 7 through 9 amend the criteria for a municipality to receive fire state aid on behalf of a fire department. The qualification criteria in current law does not reflect the operations of a 21st century fire department. The department worked with the stakeholders mentioned at the outset to agree on new appropriate criteria for purposes of qualifying for fire state aid. These include requiring a fire department to have a fire department identification number and be dispatched by a 911 service. Sections 10 to 12, 15, and 16 create filing and data usage requirements that ensure the department is using the most accurate, up-to-date, and relevant data to calculate fire state aid. For example, the amendments require that municipalities report the parameters of a fire department service area, information necessary to calculate fire state aid, but not currently required by statute. My colleague Jim had already explained sections 13 and 20. And then finally, section 23 eliminates outdated language no longer needed by the department. So this concludes article 3, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Reisdorf. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I believe Ms. Reisdorf said that a tax bill did not pass in 2017. Did I get that right? A tax bill did pass the House, Senate, and through conference committee in 2017, and it was vetoed by the governor. And of course, I'm real touchy about that. So did she say 2017 or did I miss that?
Ms. Reisdorf. I forget what you said exactly.
That's okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids. No, I'm sorry if I misspoke. I was referring to 2020.
Oh, 2020. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Reisdorf. Thank you. I'm just a little touchy on that 2017.
2020 is under my watch, Chair David. So there you go. all right. Any other questions at this point? And, you know, I know we've got one testifier for sure on this part, on this fire and police. And maybe we could do that now. Do we have the chief with us?
Good afternoon, Chair David Zip. I'm here.
Chief Jungman, yes. If you go ahead, and since we're on this part, why don't you testify, if you would. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to testify. My name is BJ Jungman. I serve as the chair for the Minnesota Fire Association Coalition, which represents the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, which is the leader of the over 700 fire departments in the state, the Minnesota Fire Department Association, the Fire Marshals Association of Minnesota, and the Minnesota Chapter of the International Association of Arson Investigators. Thank you, Chair Marquardt, for carrying House File 3083, in particular, Article 3. We wish to thank you and the Department of Revenue staff for working to update this antiquated language that directs the Department of Revenue on how to administer fire state aids. We also wish to thank you, Chair Marquardt, for your leadership on fire protection districts last session. This has meant a great deal to the fire departments across Minnesota, and we thank you and the entire tax committee for your work to pass this important legislation. Additionally, we also want to thank Representative Howard and former Tax Chair Davids for their willingness to introduce these firefighter definition updates in a standalone bill. We appreciate their strong support of the fire service. We are attempting to address in the bill is to update the language defining a fire department specific to the allocation of state aid from the Department of Revenue. The current language leaves unintended loopholes that could allow nonprofits that are not fire departments providing service to a community to collect fire state aid. The current form does not require a department to have a dispatch center that sends them on emergency incidents, only that they provide fire service, which is ambiguous. The revised language will provide definitions that are current to ensure that all legitimate fire departments in the state continue to receive their much needed and appreciated state aid. We were honored to work with many people at the Department of Revenue to make sure this language was updated and works for everyone. We greatly appreciate their competence and assistance. We understand these changes do not impact pension aids in any way, and that this article addresses the Department of Revenue clarifying language only. While this legislation is technical in nature and relatively small compared to many issues you deal with on this committee, this issue is very important to us and ensures public dollars that were intended for fire departments are not misappropriated. Again, thank you, Chair Marquardt, Representative Howard, former Chair Davids, we appreciate your support, and I'm available for questions.
Very good. Thank you, Chief Jungman, for that. Any questions? And the reason I'm kind of stopping at this point a little bit, because Article 3 is kind of the big section of this bill where most of the work was done. So, all right, I'm not seeing any questions. Thank you so much, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So we'll move now to Article 4. Who is going to lead that off?
Mr. Chair, this is Margaret Reiserf again. I'm going to be describing the technical change in Section 1, and my colleague Nick Xanthopoulos will be summarizing the second section. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 4, Section 1 makes a technical change to the Property Tax Refund Chapter 290 Cap A. Due to technical changes enacted regarding the homestead application date under Section 273.124, changed the date from December 15th to December 31st of the assessment year. We need to then update the cross-reference for the property tax refund. And so the change here simply changes that date from December 15th to December 31st, consistent with 273.124. And now I'll turn it over to Nick.
Very good. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nick Xanthopoulos. I'm a staff attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Article 4, Section 2 amends the State of Minnesota Property Tax Refund Act. Under current law, the Commissioner of Revenue can require owners and managing agents to e-file copies of certificates of rent paid, CRPs, issued to renters. This section lets the department authenticate the identity of the owner or managing agent who submits a certificate of rent paid to the department. The taxpayer identification number will not be on the CRP provided to the renter. Without this authority, the Commissioner of Revenue is unable to require the issuer's taxpayer identification number. Revenue has consulted with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association about this process. This section is effective for refund claims based on rent paid in 2022 and thereafter. And that concludes the policy and technical bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Xanthopoulos. Is there any questions on Article 4? All right, any questions, members, on House File 3083? Well, first of all, let me go. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House File 3083? I am not seeing any nor getting any report from my committee administrator that there is. So, members, any questions? So I want to thank the Department of Revenue. I know I always kind of joke how this is non-controversial and all those things, but I know a lot of hard work goes into looking at all of the statutes that relate to all of our tax laws and trying to update those and make them more efficient and do away with obsolete language and all of that and clarification. So I thank you very much to the Department of Revenue for your work on this. And we do know that the revenue estimate is zero on the bill, so it is not to raise any taxes. But having said that, we are going to get clarification on that part in the bill, which going back is Article 2, just so we're very clear here. So it's Article 2, Section 3, Subdivision 4, Letter B. So it's line 6.7 to 6.10. We are going to do more clarification on that part. But I think that was the only part that I heard that we had some question on, so we will come back and do that. All right, with that, then I'm going to renew my motion to lay over House File 3083 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Members, we have to go back to House File 3104. We did take a vote on that, which was an oral vote, but we need to take a roll call. So we have a motion, the Les Legard motion, to refer House File 3104 to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee, and we have to take a roll call. So, Ms. Griscak, could you please take the roll?
Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Representative Marquardt, aye. Representative Les Legard.
Les Legard, aye.
Les Legard, aye. Representative Davids.
Davids votes aye.
Representative Davids, aye. Representative Agbaje.
Aye.
Representative Agbaje, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Carlson, aye. Representative Detmer. Representative Detmer. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, aye.
Representative Garofalo, aye. Representative Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Representative Gomez, aye. Representative Herr.
Herr, aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, roll calls, aye.
Representative Hertas, aye. Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald. Representative Miller.
Miller, aye.
Representative Miller, aye. Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Moran, aye. Representative Mortensen.
Mortensen, aye.
Representative Mortensen, aye. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Robbins, aye. Representative Sendell.
Aye.
Representative Sendell, aye. Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Representative Schultz, aye. Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson. Representative Swazinski.
Swazinski, aye.
Representative Swazinski, aye. Representative Joachim.
Joachim, aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. Representative Detmer. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, no.
Representative McDonald, nay.
Representative McDonald, we're voting on House File 3104.
Yes, I'm sorry, McDonald, aye.
Representative McDonald, aye. Representative Stevenson.
Stevenson, aye.
Representative Stevenson, aye. Representative Detmer. We have 19 ayes, zero nays.
The House File 30, the Lessigard motion to refer House File 3104 to the Agriculture Finance and Policy Committee passes 19-0. And sorry for my interruption during the roll call, but it was my mistake that we were taking the roll call, and I wanted to make sure everyone knew what we were voting on. So I apologize for that. So thank you, members. So next week, we're not looking right now to meet on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'd come back, and we're going to have a bill, Representative Herr, on the expanding the student loan credit. And then on Thursday, Representative Petitza Batun looking at the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Credit. So those are planned to meet next Wednesday and Thursday. So members, thank you. Have an excellent rest of the week. And with that, we are adjourned.